With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I'm Neil Atkinson, and with me, I've got Ian Ryan, Ben Johnson, and Adam Melia to talk about a Newcastle 1, Liverpool 3, and a general end of season. And, you know, we'll come on to talk about staring at the table a lot and using the word champions a lot. But actually, it was probably our nicest and most end of season-y game since we've been in, for us, the end of the season. Ben, I was... You know, it's weird in that it felt in the end like we kicked off minus one rather than one conceded, but that almost just sort of gave Liverpool a little bit of an impetus, a little bit of a driving force, and it was on the beach in the best possible way, I felt, the match.
Yeah, it was, the goal was ridiculous, we'd probably come on to that. But it was a performance that I took from it, a performance that, all right, yeah, we were quite relaxed, but also... ruthlessly efficient. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? In the way that we were talking after the game, and we were like, well, there's no way we're not challenging next year based on that. You know, we play that game next year and we win. Let's say, we were saying we're going to win 25 games, no problem. You know, straight off the blocks, we're going to win 25 games, bang. And then it's about what happens in them other games, whether we can win it again or not. But I thought we were really good, to be fair. And I thought Newcastle did the best to stay in the game. Couldn't believe the luck to go 1-0 up to a ridiculous goal. But Liverpool played well and they deserved the victory.
It was a lot of patience and quality finishing. Ian, they moved Newcastle around and moved them around. And there's a point watching the game on about 75 where I genuinely felt sorry for the Newcastle sort of back seven, back eight, in that they looked physically done. They just looked like, you know, by that point we've got the front three on. We're absolutely flying at them. But the challenge for them never stops. It never slows down. And they spend the whole game just trying to work out where they need to be. Little sprints here, little sprints there, Newcastle, just to try to stay in shape, because Liverpool just moved them around with such patience.
100%, Neil. And it's testament to us as a team, as a side, the mentality, which we speak about so often. We could have switched off. It's the last day. No one's expecting anything too big, nothing too intense, because, you know, the league's been done and dusted for a long time. We know that. So I think as a fan base, we would have forgiven Liverpool for maybe not being at the races. They do start slow, as John was alluded to there, but they do get into the gears pretty quickly after that. And it got referenced loads on Twitter yesterday. But if you're a Newcastle team, and if you're a Newcastle team missing loads of lads at the back, which they were, and you see the front three warming up, and you think, for fuck's sake, I mean, it just kills you. It absolutely kills you, because you know what you're in for. Then you're in for more power, more pace, more intensity, better finishing, a better quality of play, if we can say that as well. Let's be honest, you know, Divock gets his goal. He takes it really well. But again, I think there was a general feel across most of the social media that he wasn't having a great game. We did a show, Neil, on Friday, which hasn't gone out yet, and I think, broadly speaking, most of us were of the same opinion that we've probably seen enough of Divock Origi now. But that said, he is still a player that can find a big goal in a big moment. And it, you know, it wasn't a huge goal because, as I say, you know, Liverpool have had the league done and dusted for a while now. But it was still nice to take a 2-1. It was still nice to get to that 99. You can imagine both managers were pretty motivated ahead of the game. You know, Steve Bruce is going into it only a point behind Rafa Benitez a season previously, and I think for him that would have been a big motivation, because everyone still talks about Benitez and how Steve Bruce isn't up to the job. So I think to beat that points total would have been huge motivation for him. And Liverpool want the 99 points. You know, this is on the back of a 97, 99 is quite magnificent, to be honest.
It's through the game, Adam, the quality of Liverpool's finishing, I think, is excellent, to be honest with you. The Van Dijk header is unstoppable. It's not a bullet. It's just never, ever, ever in a place where the goalkeeper is going to be able to reach it. You've got the Origi effort and the Mane effort, both curling into the same post. You know, they are three genuine genuinely excellent finishes.
Yeah, and I think that's once the game settled into its rhythm, that always looked likely to be the outcome. I thought we got better as the game went on, and Newcastle didn't really look like scoring after, you know, as we've said, the opening goal, which is almost like one of them where one team lets the other one walk it into the net. It felt like it was before the commentary had even come on in the pub. So it did feel like it was, you know, a surreal goal head start. But from there on, it was it was funny actually, because as you describe it, it's almost like they were the sorts of goals which were one or two players doing great things that caused the goals to happen. And around that, it was just, I just felt it was really solid. I felt like it was a solid performance, holding a team at arm's length, as we've, you know, this is an amazing skill that we've managed to develop after years of never being able to, you know, no game ever felt safe, did it, for years. And now we just...
That one felt 1-1.
Yeah. And there's always... 90 minutes is always too long for the other team these days. And we just hold teams at arm's length. And then whether it be... You know, a moment of brilliance from one of our top players, or even when they're not playing, you know, there's other players will stand up, and as we said, as Ian said there, Divock, it was his goal, wasn't it? He scored that goal so many times, and actually, I think at that point, I can't remember whether we were with two conversations we'd had just before he scored, and I know because Ben was involved with one of them, there was a big concrete pillar obscuring me and Ben from being able to see each other, and we kept having to crane around it. And Ben said, I think Divock's like this. It's just like in the way of James Milner, in the way all the time. And then me and another mate were saying, is he at this stage any better than Ricky Lambert? And then he scored.
I'll talk about Divock in a minute, Ben. There's part of what Adam says there, which I think is why this Liverpool side is still oddly sort of underappreciated, in that they don't quite pull teams apart, like, for instance, the City side that got 100 points. They just work them into the ground. And I think there's more than one way to skin that particular cat, you know, but Liverpool, they would have got those goals. When I said before about it, genuinely felt like we'd won the game at 1-1. Because you knew that at some sort of point, this really good Newcastle resistance was just going to break. And when Adam says, you know, games are at arm's length, or they feel worn in a way, that's, it's because you get the impression the other side struggle to get the energy to muster a decent attack with numbers. They're so drained by what we do. And I think that was a really good example of it, that game. Newcastle, they're playing a back five. There's, you know, there's pretty much holding midfielders in front. They should be really difficult. And they put up stubborn resistance, but you just watch them be eroded by Liverpool.
Yeah, you do, and it's interesting how that's evolved over Klopp's period of time. I remember playing Hull at home years ago, like when I think it was Klopp's first full season, and we ground them into the floor. But it was with more intensity, with like proper, you know, pressing, gegenpressing. You know, that whole philosophy was like just legging it and grinding and then using the ball. Now when you watch it, you just think, teams are going to sit in, okay, fine, that's great. And you can have a goal first 20 seconds, that's great, because you aren't now going to touch it for 90 minutes, pretty much. If you're going to set up in your half, then what we're going to do is we're going to build pressure for 90 minutes, and we're not going to let you out. And I think it's dead interesting. You watch the position of the centre-halves yesterday. Gomez and Van Dijk are pretty much playing 15 yards inside their half.
Yeah,
that's the line. That's how much we push them back, and then we move the ball from there. So they're basically playing in Fabinho's role themselves. Never mind having to deal with them the other way, because we're faster than both of them. We've got the best sweeper keeper, you know, that you can come out and win any ball anyway. So what you're asking teams to do then is come up with a plan that can A, resist someone who's working harder than you, is better on the ball than you, passes the ball better than you, is faster than you and stronger than you for 90 minutes. Now, how many teams are capable of doing that if Liverpool are on it with the tempo that they had? Well, the records show for themselves over the last two seasons, not very many. Yeah. And the point you say about, you know, City, the difference with City go one up in a game, and then they're able to carve teams apart all day long. Liverpool aren't quite as... subtle as that in a weird way. It's more we're just gonna grind you into the dust until you've got you've got it's Benitez's wrecking machine. You know, Benitez wanted to build a wrecking machine when Liverpool have sort of built the ultimate one. You can, when they play like that, and I think the point you made, about the front three, just it's so dispiriting. If you've managed to stay in the game, you see them warming up and you think, oh my God, the three of them at once, oh my, you are messing on me. Because it's been hard enough with this big pillar who's giving it away and getting in everybody's way. Oh, and by the way, he's just slotted one in the corner out of nothing when he's been shite and is about to go off. Being hard enough with that, with a centre mid playing right wing, and a forward from the Austrian division who's still trying to find his feet, it's been hard enough to come to play against, and then you're going to bring on three of the best forwards in the world. And it almost feels unfair at times, and it felt unfair the last 20 minutes that we could bring on them three players. And it's not, I suppose, in lesser teams, them three players come on, and it's easy to, you know, not really get in the game because you don't need to. You can drift about and you can work at 80% of your tempo because you don't really need to graft because Liverpool are going to win anyway. But Liverpool are so relentless that they bring them three players on, and them three players play at their best level, you know, at 100% motivated, at 100% work rate. You know, Firmino was just a pleasure to watch.
He really was.
And I think you've put it in the agenda, and what we were talking about it yesterday, is that what you sort of hope Liverpool have got next season that they maybe haven't had this season is the ability to take games into the second half with legs rested the way we did yesterday, and then bring them three on for half an hour. Say, go ahead, go and score six. And run these into the ground because the punch drunk, they're on the ropes, they're ready to be put to bed. Go and put them to bed, they're happy to be put to bed. And I think you just maybe need another one. Other, I think, you know, we talked about Div and we might talk about him again. He's just the strangest footballer, in that he's simultaneously really effective and absolutely ineffective.
Just on that. I'll go to Ian on Dave, and then I'll bring Adam back in as well, because I think that for me, Ben sort of strikes at it there. I'm convinced that Divock will go somewhere and he'll score 20 goals. He's actually got our best goals to minutes ratio all comps this season, Divock Origi, Ian. And he's played some, you know, he's had some time on the pitch playing for Liverpool. He's got our best goals to minutes ratio. And to me, it's spectacular, I think. I think that he could conceivably move somewhere. Stay in the Premier League. If he got to a top 10 side, he could outscore Mane and Salah, I think, potentially. The flip side of it is that he makes the quality of the football poorer. And he's just simply not as good at football, but the purpose of football is to kick the ball in the back of the net. And so this is always the sort of the circular argument of Divock Origi. He's very, very good at the purpose of football. He's less good at the football, but he's really good at the point of it because he kicks the ball in the net, so you win more games possibly because you've got him. But the flip side is, yeah, but the football won't be as good. And you can, he's almost, we can almost call it the Origi paradox.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, you don't like criticising Divock Origi because he's given us some very, very special moments. And
scores a belter yesterday, by the way. We're about to criticise him in a game where he scores a 20-yarder, curled into the corner. That's unstoppable. That's what you're about to do. I just want to... And if you're still going to do it, I just want to say that that's what you're about to do.
I'm a fan of it, to be honest. but yeah, I mean, he does. But he's made... His Liverpool career has been just like that, hasn't it? It's been littered with loads of special moments. And you think about his finishing ability... In that most pressurised scenarios, Barcelona being a huge example of that, and he takes that goal that night better than probably the majority of footballers could even dream of taking it under that pressure. It's so instinctive, it's brilliant, and maybe that's what helped him because it is instinctive. But you think about the goals against Everton this season when he pulls it out the sky when Lovren's hits a 40-50-yard pass to him, and he makes it look like it's the most simple thing in the world to take that down and knock it in the back of the net. And it's not. It's a brilliant finish. It's a really, really tough finish, but he makes it look easy. But I think the problem you've got, the way Liverpool play, you know, there's times when centre forwards have got to be really involved in the build up and stuff, and typically from a technical point of view isn't what the other front three lads are, and that's where maybe it falls down a little bit. I actually thought at the beginning of the season maybe one or two things had dropped with Divock. You know, you see him start that night against Norwich and he's making a number of intelligent runs from out to in, and he gets his goal that night by doing that. He scores ahead. That's a really good goal. And there's other times in the season where you think, wow, he does look unplayable, but it is too few and far between, unfortunately, now. And I think, you know, I'd have been perfectly fine if Divock had left after the Champions League final. And maybe some people wouldn't have liked that because, you know, he's at that moment and maybe he deserves a little bit longer. But I always felt it was a good time for him to go out, to be honest. I mean, what else are you going to go on and do after you've scored a goal in the Champions League final? It's only going to go downhill, to be fair. And I think now most of us are probably at the point where we think, you know, we wish him well. He will go down as a legend. There's no doubt about that. You know, what he's done in those big games, in those big moments, he's done more than most people can dream of. Let's be honest about that. But it is, I think, a time now when Liverpool look to move him on. And as you said there, Neil, there's no doubt in my mind there'll be a club in the top half of the Premier League who could do a lot worse than go and get Divock Origi and stick him up front. And he'll do bits for you and he'll score goals. And he can be a real threat if you play to his strengths. But I don't think that's ever going to be at Liverpool Football Club, to be honest. And as I say, I wish him all the best. Outstanding contribution. Certainly across the last 2 years. You know, even if you think about the Newcastle game when we're going for the league and he pops up with that goal then, and I couldn't have loved him anymore that night, honestly. It was was brilliant stuff. But, and there is always a but with Divock, he's not quite the level that you need. He's not quite the level you want, and I don't think he's ever going to get there either. So for me, it makes all the sense in the world now to see whether he can find himself at another club.
The Origi paradox, there's always a but. Adam?
Yeah, we were saying about him that, you know, if you're sort of at the level of football fan that the kind of I am, and you support another club and you don't really watch other clubs that much, if you sign a Divock Origi, you're excited. And so I think that there is, you know, say he goes to, I don't know, Inter Milan or something, they'd be thinking, God, Divock Origi scores two against Barca, scores in the Champions League final, scores, you know, whatever they might have seen in the league, and you can see that, and I'm not sure really. I don't know whether I agree with you about him scoring 20 a season, Neil. I think that the thing that's in the back of my mind always about Divock is how good he was before he broke his leg, in the derby. Because he's never been that player since. Mm. He's a very different sort of delicate player now, delicate forward. And rather than then, it was all kind of like he was unplayable. I'd have said just before he broke his leg, he was scoring in every game. And again, I think we would have probably won that Europa League had he not been injured that season. Because he seemed like he was scoring in every round of that competition. And he's come back a different sort of player. And I don't really know what sort of player he is. He's very unusual. To be honest, I agree with all of the with the positives people have said. And Ian, just talking about those goals, you know, makes me remember it very fondly. But my main feeling is that I don't want to be watching him this time next year. I really don't. And it makes me it would make me feel less confident about our ongoing success, because The thing that I say every close season is what we want to do is to improve, and you know we can't rest on our laurels just with one measly title, can we? we I want to win trebles, I want to win three in a row league. So to do that, we need to be in a place where the first sub striking option is not Divock Origi. So it's not, you know, because it's as Ben I think alluded to, he's not a neutral really. Is he? I think he actually harms how we play. He has a negative impact on us. If he scored the goals he did and did nothing, that would be better. But he scores the goals he does. So I'm surprised by you saying that his goals to minutes record is good, because it feels like they've trickled off a bit, I think, his goals, and you're left with. It just feels that you're left with somebody who's having a negative impact on your team, unfortunately.
I think, sorry mate, I'm just going to jump. I think he's the one player who he was suffered because of the way Liverpool, the way we play has changed. Do you know what I mean? So when Klopp first come in, we were very much high press, high counter attack. And I think Divock with space in front of him is much better than Divock in surrounded by 10 Newcastle players and 8 Liverpool players in very confined spaces. Because, you know, you look at the way Liverpool are treated now by most teams, if not all in the league, with the exception of City.
Mm.
They sit in camp and they won't give us any space because they know we'll bladder them on the break. So we've had to develop into this really effective passing machine as well. And most of that involves very intricate play by the three attacking forwards. You know, and the brilliance and almost uniqueness of Salah and Mane in that they're able to score at 20 goals a year, but also able to get the ball in feet, turn, lay it off first time. The passing ability is brilliant. The positional, you know, appreciation brilliant. The interplay, the way we break teams down is all inter feet, lay off. There's always, it's very structured, although it looks like it isn't. And I just don't think that plays to Div's strengths at all. And you know, we put him in them positions, and we clearly think he's got something because he's still there. I mean, you know, he has because he scores goals. But I just don't think you pass it to him, and everybody around him moves off him for the structured play. You know, goes into the feet. Firmino, whoever it is, Salah goes inside, blah blah blah, and Div has 5 touches. And then plays the pass he should have played after one. And it just, we just stop and we stop and we stop. And the difficulty is, I think the difficulty for Liverpool is that's great, we're going to get short of him. What do we get in his place? Because it's got to be someone similar to Sadio and Mo. And how do you find one of them? And if you look at what Brewster's doing at Swansea, we've had this conversation like as mates. Would Brewster give you more than what Div gives you when it's tight and you maybe not, you know, and it, I don't know, because, you know, Div scoring goals like there's no tomorrow. Brewster is at a lower level, but would he get the same space that he
looked? Brewster looked like he was impacted in a similar way to Origi when he played for us last season. Brewster seemed like he struggled with the intricate style that we have as well, didn't he?
I don't think he hasn't had that much time with any of the others, and I think that's the interesting thing with Brewster is how does it look when he's, for instance, if he's playing through the middle with one of the others or two of the others either side of him. That's where I'd like to see it. Or if he's got Firmino in there and he comes in and plays where Salah is or something like that, but with Mane as well, because that's what you haven't got to see for Brewster properly, like in any
number of games. If Divock went to Swansea, he'd be scoring a bag full, wouldn't he?
He would, because that's what he does.
4 years a year.
No, that's what he does. All right, on the early goal, I'll come back to you on it, Ben. The quick free kick doesn't happen earlier in the season. And where there is that sort of stuff around losing 1%, for me, that's a really, really good example of it. I suspect it doesn't even happen after 10 minutes in the game, to be quite honest with you, but it comes so early. And then also, Williams just being a couple of yards too deep, that doesn't happen early in the season, not least because he probably doesn't start the game. But also, I think in general, you know, I think that everyone's just a bit better organised, just that tiny little bit more switched on. I think that is, if you ever want to have a chat about the losing 1% after you've won the league, I think that's almost a 30 seconds that completely encapsulates it.
Yeah, definitely. You never give the opposition the ball on it when they want to take a quick free kick. Just don't do it, because it's never going to benefit you. And Liverpool would never do it in a normal circumstance. And Genie just goes, "Oh yeah, have you? Oh shit, you've scored." It's that squared, isn't it? Like 20% just drop, just a moment's elapse in concentration. Yeah, feel a little bit out of it. Williams has hard lines because there's no way the free kick should get tough. Do you know what I mean? We just shouldn't give him the ball, so we shouldn't have to get in line. He's probably trying to get set up and he's gone, "What the fuck?" You know, he's just had to react, and it's just been unfortunate that he's been 2 yards deeper than everybody else. They shouldn't have to be setting a line because the free kick shouldn't be getting tough. Do you know what I mean? And it was so ridiculous. Like, they're trying to review VAR off like a picture off someone's phone from miles away. Was it just then? No one was ready. Cameraman was having a clue. He was like, "Yo, we're kicking off in a minute. Yeah, I better go. Because it's fucking hell." They're drawing lines on like, and he was like, "You can't. It's either give the goal at fire because we're going to win anyway. But let's fucking just say VAR weren't working. You can't start to oh yeah, it's definitely one."
It takes a bit of time for Williams to get over, Ian, and I think he actually has a good second half. Williams, he's not helped by the fact that everybody forgets how to pass to him a little bit in the second half, but he has a good second half, I think it's fair to say. But I think he is rattled by it in the first, isn't he, in a way that it's perfectly reasonable given his age.
Absolutely. And what John O's just described there was literally me. I wasn't ready for the first goal. I was making a broom, and then next minute I've come in with one down. So yeah, I can help myself with that situation. I mean, what Ben said there was right. I mean, I think if you're the manager at half time, yes, you probably have a word with Williams, but were you furious with your senior players for not stopping that free kick and someone just standing on it? And if you have to take a yellow card early on, you take a yellow card, but that situation should never have materialised. And I think, from Williams' point of view, this is the time to learn on the job. You know, you can make mistakes when you've won the league and you can learn, and this is the time to do it. So I actually felt really sorry for him when we had the game at Brighton and he gets put left back. I know he's done bits for Wales at left back, but I didn't half think it was a big ask. You know, first senior start in the league and you're playing out of position, essentially. And I think I almost felt like let him learn his trade a little bit at right back before we start shifting him round. And I think you're right about the passing and stuff. Second half, it didn't really help him. I'd be a little bit concerned if we were relying on Williams to cover both full-back areas next season. And that's not, you know, that's nothing against the lad. He's a young player. He's going to take a little bit of time. From what I've seen so far, he looks an exciting prospect. And I've got every reason to believe he'll go on and have a really good Liverpool career. But you don't want him to kind of be exposed too much too soon. And I think if he's your cover for both sides, that would worry me a little bit. If all of a sudden I've got to look at Williams as my option for 6 or 7 Premier League games in a row, that would concern me a little bit. And as I say, nothing against him. I think he'll go on and have a really good career, but it does feel very early for him. He's still a kid. And I think actually in that Brighton game, he does well in parts, but there's just times where you can see the opposition are targeting him and it becomes difficult for him. And you're always saying he'll got a target somewhere. And let's be honest, if he's playing in this Liverpool team, that's the area they're going to target. And you do see, you know, opposition players getting in behind them a little bit too easy. But again, it's a learning curve for him. He's going to... No, Trent Alexander-Arnold himself, the best right-back in world football, was making similar mistakes. He was getting caught upfield. People were getting in behind too easy. You think about that game at Old Trafford where Marcus Rashford tears him apart and people were questioning Trent that night. And for me, there was no reason to have a question because you knew the ability the lad had. You knew what kind of career, or you could certainly sense what kind of career Trent was going to have because there were so many positives. And I'm not saying Williams is that level, but I think there's every chance he does turn out to be a really good player for this football club. But he will need time, and I don't really want to see him get loads and loads of minutes. Certainly at left back, where you think it's not his natural position, it can be difficult for a player to adjust. So that's an area where I want Liverpool to do a little bit of business if he can. Back up Andy Robbo, and then, as I say, you can use Williams as and when for cover for Trent.
It's the end up with Richie Almiron, Sam Maximan, Dwight Gayle, Ben Taleb to an extent. They all have a go on that side, Adam, at some point during the game. And again, I think that's something which, you know, it doesn't make it easy. You're trying to find your way. You feel as though you're responsible for an early mistake, but also everything they're doing is coming that way. I actually think it's part of why, you know, Gomez's performance is as exceptional as I actually think it is. I think he's tremendous, Gomez. And one of the things he does brilliantly is he helps Williams through, and he almost plays two positions at times in that first 45 minutes.
Yeah. And I suppose if we're comparing it to Trent at Old Trafford, as Ian just did, I thought Lovren didn't help Trent at all at Old Trafford on that occasion, whereas Gomez really did help Williams. I've got no issue with him at right back, actually. I think the Brighton game that Ian mentioned, it just showed up that he's pretty one-footed and it's not his left. His whole body shape looked wrong for left back, so I don't want to see him there, really. And it's something that he should be really working on, to be fair, because he needs to be able to be less one-footed, basically, if he's going to play for Liverpool. So, but I really like him. He's very you can tell when he's on the pitch, can't you? He's very scrappy. You know, I don't know what the word is, but he's like, I like that in a left back. In a full back. He's tall and he seems to be involved. I'm sort of surprised he hasn't managed to score yet, actually, because he's always looking for a shot as well, which I like. There's loads to really like about him, and I've got no issue with, you know, the thing which we've discussed many times and people are in different camps about it, is the Trent in midfield thing. So, you know, I can see Williams at right back with Trent in front of him being an interesting thing to look at, and I was half expecting to maybe see that in one of these last games. I thought that he was in the game, and as you say, after the early setback, you might have thought it was going to be a struggle for him with everything coming down that side. But I thought he did really well. I really like him, and in fact, one of our mine and Ben's mates was talking about him pre-match, and so I'm sort of, you know, looking out for him anyway, because we could sort of had a chat about him, and I thought he was really good, and, you know, dead unlucky for the early goal, and I hate Dwight Gayle. Just thought I'd mention that. Never forgiven him from the 3-3. He's I just don't like it. Don't like how he always does something against us. Same as Shelby, he always does something against us as well. Don't like his face.
I want to talk about Milner, Ben. I thought he was just terrific, to be honest with you. I thought it was just really, there's a point at which he emerges with the ball on about 80 when it's all bobbled around midfield and everyone's had a little bit of a scrap, and it's Milner who in the end gets one touch and then diverts it away. I really enjoyed it when he nearly lost it and did step overs afterwards. That really made me laugh. And it felt like it was making him laugh as well. It just looks to me, I think it's great, and this is true of all the Liverpool players, but it can be true of all of them, and it can be truer of a couple. I think Milner just loves the scrap. I think he just loves the scrap in every sense, not just the idea of having to physically win the battle, but mentally win the battle, and then technically win the battle, and then win the game. And it looks to me like, you know, I one of the things I took from the game was you just watch 10 minutes of that game. And because we always think about our midfield three, about them being, you know, so combative, winning it back, getting it forward quickly, they're just also technically good, and that includes Milner as well. I was just really pleased with them. For me, you know, it's only Emo Gomez for MOM in the end.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I thought he was really good. And I think you look at that midfield, and you know, if there was something riding on the game, I'd look at that midfield and think, well, we're probably going to miss Henderson, we're probably going to miss Fabinho. And I think, actually, we never, really.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a credit to the three midfielders who played, Gini as well. Milner's funny, isn't he? Because he hasn't played as much as I thought he may do the last few weeks. And you sort of start thinking, you know, he's getting on a bit. Is his legs tightening up a little bit? Is it, you know, we've all watched players of that age. Like Henshaw just fell off a cliff one day, woke up, couldn't run. Remember that was weird, wasn't it? Mid-season. It's like really good last week, and then this week, oh, by the way, my legs are completely gone. And we've seen that happen to players over the years, and I start to think, I wonder if he's just dropping off. He's still fit as a fiddle, but it's just his output's not as good. And then he plays yesterday and looks as good as he has in midfield all season and all last season, and you think, oh no, he's fine. He's fine. He's just been doing press ups or something. It's funny all the things you said about him, about his grit and his determination, about him loving the scrap. I think that's just the way he is. Do you know what I mean? That's just in his nature. But I love him in field. I love him in field, and he likes to kick people, basically. I think you need it. I think now and again you need it. You need someone who's happy to just go rattling into someone and say, hey, bollocks, that's our ball, give it back. And Milner likes to do that a lot, you know, and it's something to be said for it.
There's just on that, Neil just mentioned there two players who I think are great at looking after other people as well as their own game. And you think you get certain footballers, don't you, that just want to concentrate on their own game, and they get that, and there's nothing wrong with it. But in Milner and in Gomez, you know, two players that the opposite ends in terms of the career. They're both lads who will look after someone else for 5 or 10 if you need it. And I think if you think about Gomez's performance against Everton in the Cup, he's absolutely sensational that night, and he's just looking after his partner all the time, just dropping when he needs to. It's just a brilliant game from a fella who was, what, probably 22 at the time, and he's playing next to lads who are probably the similar age to him, but he's got far more experience. And that night, that game against Everton told me a lot about Joe Gomez, and I think, I mean, I wouldn't talk him for anyone. I think, you know, Virgil van Dijk's clearly the best centre-half in the league. People might talk about Laporte, but I think Joe Gomez is right up there. You think, you know, you think about what Virgil was doing at a similar age. He wasn't doing what Joe Gomez was doing, and I think he's on that path. Whether he can be as good as Virgil, I'm not too sure, because Virgil's gone on and hit unbelievable levels. But Joe Gomez is some player, by the way. But, I mean, as I say, the turn of pace, he's the perfect partner for Virgil van Dijk. And I think Milner, I mean, I remember when Milner signed and people were talking about the wage he was getting and questioning whether Liverpool should be paying that much. And there was a clip that went round on the Anfield Rap social recently when Andy Robbo signed, and I think I was talking about Milner's legs falling off potentially next season, but it was 2017 then, and he's still got
those legs.
Absolutely, he's still proving people wrong. He's still looking after teammates. Now, you think about the mentality of the player, and when Liverpool have got cup matches earlier in the season, it's James Milner who's knocking on the dressing room door saying, I want to be part of this, I want to look after these lads, I want to give them a bit of insight into what it's going to be like when you step onto the pitch, I want to talk to them off the game, I want to make sure they're okay. And you can't have enough players like that in and around your squad. He's gone on to become an absolute Liverpool legend, by the way. You know, you'll now think of James Milner and you'll think of Liverpool Football Club because he's played for us more than anyone else. He's been a brilliant addition. He's probably gone a lot further than any of us thought he would in terms of his achievements. But my God, I mean, he's been Mr. Reliable. And I know there's times where maybe across his Liverpool career you've thought, well, I don't want to see Milner in this game. And I think that's fine, because there are other players who maybe add a little bit more, maybe going forward. But if he was on the call, he may say, listen, you know, one season I got more assists than anyone in the Champions League, so what are you saying about that? But I think, you know, across his career, he's just been brilliant, and I can't speak highly enough of him, to be honest. And as I say, it may be coming to an end. Now, you start to see maybe one or two injuries with Milner. I'm just thinking, you know, he's 35 in January. Is that just maybe a little bit of a sign? But listen, we've all been proven wrong before with James Milner, so who knows?
James Milner spoke to John Gibbons last week for an interview that's coming out on Tuesday, the 28th of July, on the Anfield Wrap. If you want to subscribe to consider it, there's the interview with Henderson as well, and there's more to come. Delighted to speak to James Milner. Here's him and John.
You know, from what the manager instills, and right from the owners and the recruitment, the job they've done getting very good players in, and the right players, but also characters. I think that's massively important in how we do things and how we play. You know, if you have anyone with an ego or puts themselves over the team, it doesn't work, not how we play football. So I think that's special. Obviously, very good players, but how we want to work for everything and everyone together, and the mental strength and side of dealing with disappointments and bouncing back like we have done, and just being relentless. I think the consistency we've shown over the last few years, the number of points we've accumulated, that disappointment of getting that amount of points last year and losing out to a very good Man City team, and a lot of teams could have crumbled and thought, you know, we've got this many points, what more can we do? But how we started the season like a train and carried it on, and you know, the pleasing thing is there's a lot that we can improve as well. And you look at the squad, and like you say, I'm probably comfortably the oldest, so that's unfortunate for me. But in terms of the squad, there's a lot of young players in there who can improve. And you know, I've said it in a few interviews joking, like Trent just thinks football's the easiest job in the world, just rocks up every year, gets a major finals and trophies, and walking around his house in his slippers with his medals dangling around his neck. It's not that easy. So I think it's important we enjoy it. You know, it doesn't come around often, but the amount of hard work that you go every single day, and the amount of boys who are in the gym every day, everybody's in the gym, everybody does that hard work. And the good thing is, which stands out, is if someone's not in there, they get told. Doesn't matter who it is, whether it's Hendo, whether it's myself, whether it's Virgil, whether it's Mo Salah, whether it's Harvey Elliott, doesn't matter who it is. If you're not doing it or pulling your weight or you're off it in training, you get a rocket. And that's special that we have players who recognise that, but also take that. And you can see how we play, I think, that how tight the group is, and that we have superstars in the side, but they don't act like superstars in terms of thinking about themselves. The team always comes first.
Great stuff there. And I got all that right as well, all the way through. Jono absolutely laughing his head off. So what we do on the breaks, I mean, I'll pull the curtain back. So now, because it's all on Zooms, what I do is I hold my hands up and I count down from 10. And I realised I was on with Ben Johnson and he was absolutely willing me to get the numbers wrong. Absolutely willing me to get the numbers wrong.
It's quite hard, isn't it? That's difficult. My deaf fingers don't work unilaterally.
So you'd have to hang on and just give it another couple of seconds. Absolutely, yep. I could just see it in Jono's face. He was more than anything in the world. He wanted me to get that wrong. Anyway, we will go. We'll talk about a couple of the front three. I'd like to assume, you know, I thought what Ben said before about Firmino, Adam, couldn't agree more. Frankly, you know, it was an absolute joy to watch Firmino, so I've got to be careful how I phrase this, but I wouldn't mind seeing Minamino maybe get 5 minutes with Mane and Salah. You know, I thought he was bright. I think it's, you know, it's a tidy enough performance from him. It's going to be a big pre-season for him though.
Yeah. I love watching Bobby, and I think that he's as much as any one person is our style of play. So it's the most difficult thing, I think, to be to somebody that the most difficult shoes to step into, probably, I think, are Firmino's. So we've got to realise that we're asking a lot of Minamino. I think he's it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think he's come a long way physically already. I think he looks much stronger than he did. I think there was somebody, it might have been Ben, had some sort of insider info about his core strength not being up to much when he arrived. So you can see that he's improved there already. And it's a really tough one. Like you say, he has got a big pre-season, because I think that as fans, there's probably different opinions around, but I'm enjoying watching him, and I'm enjoying seeing his part of the team. I'd have liked to see him with Salah and Mane, but the one thing that makes me wonder a little bit is I think that there's some players. So we always use Shaqiri whenever he plays. Everybody loves playing with him. Salah passes to him every time he gets the balls when Shaqiri plays. But there's something there in the manager's mind, obviously, which he doesn't kind of feel that. And it's almost with Minamino, I think Mane was getting a bit frustrated with him. I think it was the Chelsea game. And it just made me think, oh, I wonder, because they obviously play with him every day, don't they? So I just wonder what it is that it feels to me as an observer of just the games that he needs a goal. And once that happens, it might be as simple as that. It might start clicking into place. But that position, as I say, the Firmino position is more than goals, isn't it? Because, you know, Bobby could not score for a whole season. He almost did not score for a whole season at home, and you're never dropping him, are you? because of all the other things that he does. So, I don't know. I'm really not sure. I do like him, and I do think it'll happen. But there's just there's sort of things there that I saw when he was playing for Salzburg that I haven't seen yet for us. He's not as fast as I thought he was going to be, for example. Which you know isn't in our games, as Ben was saying before, against, you know, teams camped in their own box. You don't necessarily need that, but there's just something there which is it feels like he's just got another gear to go into. And. And it's going to be tough, actually, because when does that happen? You know, when does he get the game time? The one thing that could derail us would be like a long term injury to one of the front three. So, but it might take something like that for him to get into the swing of it. So, yeah, my jury's out, I think, isn't it?
I think another gear, Ben, is a good way to phrase it. He does look as though you're sort of, yeah, he looks like he's just on the verge of doing something terrific. Now, you know, obviously it's all going to, everyone goes on holiday, we all get a couple of weeks, we go from there. So, you know, it's all going to restart and that journey will be on for him a little bit. But you do sort of feel as though there is quite clearly a real footballer there.
Whenever he plays, he's almost brilliant. I think it only has been since that he started. He's almost really effective. He, you know, when it,
in everything that he does as well. I think he gets the role perfectly. I think he understands what he's meant to do. You know, he drops in well, he interlinks well. I think he's just not quite got it yet in terms of some weeks he presses really well and wins the ball really well. Some weeks he holds the ball up really well, but then his final pass isn't quite on it. And you think he might just be unlucky, or he's just getting to grips with the pace of it. I think he looks like a player. I think he looks like someone who could be really, really good. But you just haven't quite seen it all in one sort of package. Do you know what I mean? He's shown bits of everything in different games, but he hasn't shown it all at once. I think it's hard. You know, you got to bear in mind he's playing next to Chamberlain and Origi there yesterday. And I think that's difficult. And I'd like to see him either side. You know, I'd like to see him in the middle with Salah and Mane a fair bit more because, you know, but if Firmino does get injured, that's the role he's going to have to play. And I think they would offer something, you know, something more for him. That said, yeah, I think he's going to be sound. He just needs a little bit more. And that'll come with fitness. That'll come with, you know, additional strength. Playing, training, knowing how everybody works, blah blah blah. So I'm not worried about him. I think he'll come good. I just don't think we've quite seen it yet.
He's one for whom, Ian, pre-season is going to be significant. They've got this 2 weeks off now, and what's really interesting about this to me is it means that they're all back on the 10th of August, and they're all back. It's the first time, arguably, since the manager's been here. It's worth remembering that obviously the season that he comes in October. We go from there at that sort of stage. It's a 16th season, so I think it was it's a Euros or a World Cup at that point. I think it's a Euros in 16, yet it will have been. You know, there's also in there as well players going for Copa America and all of that sort of stuff. This is the first time he gets them all at once for 4 weeks. They're all back on the 10th of August. They're saying the season will start on the 12th of September. We're not quite clear when the Charity Shield will be. We'll go from there. But last season, for instance, Mane returns after the Community Shield. And I think the manager will be absolutely licking his lips at this. He'll never have thought he would get something like this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, totally agree. I think, you know, if you were to ask Jürgen, you probably have, to be fair, you know, what his perfect pre-season looks like, it would be just having all of his lads and not going anywhere. Now, obviously, you've got to do the trips abroad, usually for the commercial reasons. We get that. We know it's part of the dance, but none of that this season. He gets his lads and he gets to do what he wants with them, so it's brilliant. I think in terms of Minamino, I actually felt a little bit sorry for him when the celebrations were going on against Chelsea. There was a moment where he just looked a little bit lost, and then suddenly, I think that might have been Andy Robbo put his arm around him and just kind of had a little chat to him, and he was a smile on his face. But there was a moment there where I just thought he looked a little bit kind of in awe of everything that's going on. But Klopp's already spoken about Minamino in terms of his mentality and his character and stuff. And I think, you know, we know that plays a big part when Jürgen and the recruitment team go and identify footballers. So I think that's probably something we haven't got to worry about too much. I think in terms of the footballer himself, I remember being really excited when we signed him, you know, on the back of that performance at Anfield. And it is only one game, by the way, so you don't want to get too carried away. But if you think about other players who've hit that level at Anfield in recent seasons, I think about a couple of games that Eden Hazard had, you know, Marco Reus delivered a really good performance. And it was that level. It was a brilliant display. And I think, you know, if we can get that footballer on a regular basis, then we have got one hell of a player on our hands. I think it will take time. And don't forget, by the way, you know, he's come to a new country, a team it might be the hardest team to play for in world football in terms of the demands from the manager. Pep Guardiola is similar, I suppose. But he's joined in the middle of a fucking health pandemic as well and a crisis where he's been on lockdown. So he's not been able to get to know his surroundings. You know, in terms of interaction with players and stuff, a lot of it would have been virtual. It will have been probably a horrible experience for him so far in terms of just getting to know the place and being able to settle in. It must have been incredibly tough. So you've got to take all that into account. And I think sometime pre-season, I take Ben Jono's point, you know, you've got to see him with the better lads, let's be honest. You've got to see him with the Mane regularly. You've got to see him with the Salah. You've got to give them time to almost, you know, have that understanding, that relationship. And he's not really had a lot of that. You know, he's played in games where he's had a Origi next to him, or he's played in a couple of cup matches where he's had, you know, some of the lads who are, you know, let's be honest, the stiffs, basically. So it will take time. But I think there is a footballer in there, and I think, you know, it'll be interesting if he does get a run, maybe in Firmino's position. Firmino has got the team for a period of time. But I suppose the only problem is, where do you see him getting enough game time? If that front three are fit and firing, then they start most games. So there may need to be a little bit of a, you know, a look at, are there other areas he could fill? Could he play maybe slightly behind a front three in certain games? Because he has got that ability to find the pass. We've seen that in both games in the Champions League. So, yeah, interesting time for Minamino, but I'm not too worried at this stage. I do think we've got a player there. I do think he will shine if he's given the opportunity.
Talking about the games and what's going to come next, Ben, and the pre-season, you know, and the three coming on at once on the hour mark, all of that, I think, you know, it looks like UEFA are doing everything they can to stick with the Nations League. So that means that we, you know, there will be international breaks through the season. So where they make the games up, you know, it's four games lost by the time we all come back. It's not clear yet on the start date for the Champions League either. I think you are going to be looking at a lot of back-to-back games. So I think that's why, you know, with this period of pre-season, this long time that he's got, he will be looking for, you know, for me, I'm not that worried. I think the opportunities will come for a fair few of these players. It's just whether or not they can grab them. That's the key thing. And we don't know if the five subs thing will stay yet. The Premier League can do it if they want to, but I don't think there's been a final decision on that one, unless I've missed a memo at this point. But I think that's, you know, that's still up in the air. But I suspect if they can do it, they probably will. So that should lead to more opportunities for Minamino as well. But my point is more about the whole of this pre-season, not just Minamino within it. It's going to be a real opportunity for a lot of footballers to get to grips with Jurgen Klopp and what he's about.
Yeah, I think it's unique in that, you know, for a kickoff, they're only having 2 weeks off. So fitness levels are dropping, really. You know, 2 weeks, they'll have little, you know, do you know what I mean? So when they come back in pre-season, they haven't got to do 2 weeks graft to get back to the level where then you can start playing, you know, playing footy. They stopped playing 2 weeks ago and then they're going to start, you know, in 2 weeks' time. That's fuck all. So I think from a coaching perspective, you can, you know, I think they'll be made. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if you see some fairly significant alterations into how we play and, you know, some new ideas. I'm currently obsessed with us playing one centre half at the back. Loads of games. I'm. I don't know if I'm making it up, but I'm fucking running with it. Because I think you look at the game yesterday, and you look at the centre half starting positions. I think there's no point having two, especially when one of them's Virgil, and the other one could be Fabinho. So, you know, but I also think they're just going to do mad stuff because I think they're going to have. I think they're looking at it and think, right, this is a huge opportunity to innovate. You know, we've got this time now to put new systems, new processes, new whatever. We can train these lads for 4 weeks solid with no breaks. We don't have to go nowhere. You know, we don't have to work on fitness. We're being off for 2 weeks. That's it. So I think it's dead exciting. I think the Liverpool coaching staff will be dead excited about what they can achieve. And then I think you're right. I think you're right. The season coming up will be Saturday, Wednesday, you know, whatever, you know, Sunday, yep. Tuesday, whatever it is, but it's going to be game, just don't have to build it up, it's going to be cramped in together. And I do wonder whether Liverpool will be looking to, you know, you look at us when we have to do that little run, sort of when a Champions League starts again, in a normal season where we start, we sort of take it in blocks, we get the first 4 or 5 games out the way, then there's an international break, and then we have that Champions League, League Cup, you know, League, Champions League, League, and we have 2 out of the 3 forwards playing every other game, and the two midfielders either side of the anchor switch every other game, and I wonder if it'll be that again, but for the majority of the season, and the stronger teams will, you know, they'll have more games because the Champions League, but they've got better players, better resources, fitter lads, blah, blah, blah. I think it's dead interesting. I think it will be a case of loads of players having loads of game time, and it's just, I just wonder whether, I think Liverpool, you know, not want to go off on mad things here, but I think Liverpool are also going to be doing a little bit of business, and they're just being a bit sneaky about it, a bit arse and saying, we've got no dough, by the way, oh yeah, we have. But, they're letting the market settle. recalibrate, find out all the values again, then they're going to go from there. I wouldn't be surprised if by two or three. But that's probably a different show.
It is a different show. There's loads of them coming up on the Anfield app. You don't need to worry about that. You're not sure of different show options there. They will be coming very, very thick and fast. Once we just get the other side of this game, we'll take a little bit of a breath. We're recording our transfer committee shows on Wednesday. You both had emails to this morning with the rules, which are growing ever more arcane and complex, which I'm very, very pleased about. So that's to come as well. We'll have a big laugh doing them on Wednesday, and they'll be out on audio and video. And I think it will be very much worth watching them on video from Friday, not least because we'll get a couple of graphics in there and explain that as we go. Last little bit, I think Adam's Wi-Fi has gone off, so it'll just be the two of you for it, but that's all right. It is that the champions, and it's what we waited for, Ian. You know, you look at that table yesterday, and it was just like, you know, there's been different stages of this. There was the table after they beat United, say. Other people have different moments, but that was the one the cop sings at. And then there's the table, we may get Adam to reappear. There's then the table after they get themselves the result, you know, against Crystal Palace, say, or the one after Chelsea versus Manchester City. That was a great table. That was the one that told you that they'd done it. They confirmed themselves as champions. But this one, you know, we've played 38. This is it. This is what it looks like. They played 38. They got themselves in. They got 99 points, which is just absolutely incredible. It really is. And it is what the league table looks like the first time Liverpool won the league for 30 years.
I mean, the league table, I think you said there, Neil, you'll never get sick of looking at it. It's phenomenal. It really is. I mean, to go and finish 18 points clear of second is ridiculous in itself. And then you look at the gap between third as well. I mean, it's an unbelievable effort by the players, you know, to go and post 99 after the 97. I remember doing shows after the 97 points and thinking, it's going to be some sell list from the manager to go and say, you know what, we need to go and beat that. Well, easy for you to say, Jürgen, you know what I mean? But, you know, beating points is no easy thing to go and do. And yet they've gone and done it. And I think, you know, a lot of people were talking about he wants to beat City's record and get over 100 points. It was never really a big thing for me. I was never obsessed by it. It was the obsession was the league title, and it was getting that done. And they've done it in unbelievably quick time. You know, the quickest time, 7 games to go, 32 wins, which equals City's record of the last couple of seasons. I mean, 32 wins in a 38 game season is just
absolutely mad.
You got no fucking right to be doing that. I mean, it's ridiculous. It is Liverpool taking the piss. And, you know, under different circumstances, if you were being pushed towards the end of the season, you know, with that 1% drop, that 2% drop wasn't there, they would have won more games as well. And there's lots of teams throughout football history, you could probably say the same, to be fair. Some of them really good Liverpool teams as well. But they've delivered a brilliant season, one that will live long in the memory. I mean, none of us are going to forget this. It's been the craziest of seasons for lots of reasons. But those players deserve huge credit, because I have to say, you know, I at times did doubt whether it was possible to come back from that 97-point thing. I've said on other shows, I just think mentally you could be forgiven for just being exhausted and thinking, well, we can't do it at 97. When do you get to do it? Because City could go again, and you don't want to fail again, but it'll fall by a point again. Fail's not the right word, because there was no failing to get 97 points. It was absolute hard lines. But for the manager to galvanise them, and the manager, it comes back to him, a lot of this. We know when we've, you know, I've been fortunate to interview someone like James Milner. Neil, you've interviewed probably all of the squad, including the manager. For him to be able to foster that, to galvanise them to go again, it says everything about him. You know, the captain speaks about him and he says it all starts with the manager. It starts with him and goes from there. And they are a group of players that are just bought in to everything he says. You can imagine he hang off every single word. He is the most driven of individuals. There's a couple about, but for me, he's the best. He's the absolute best in the business. There's other teams with more resources to throw at this. We've not got those resources. We know that. We do it in a slightly different way, and it probably isn't successful without Jürgen Klopp. He deserves all the credit, and as I say, I hope he's here for an awful long time. And if he is here for an awful long time, even with those maybe slightly limited resources, you can see him putting more titles in the trophy cabinet.
There's definitely an element to that, Ben. Adam said before he wanted to look at winning three on the bounce or something like that. the thing about 99 points is you've got to really drop off. Now, City have this season, you know, they've dropped off from 98 down to 81. So, you know, it is possible because, you know, City are a great side and have been a great side as well. You've got to acknowledge that. But for me, just having the lived experience of this campaign, of the two of them back-to-back, and the lived experience of how Liverpool go about the business. Firstly, you can't praise them enough. You know, we could just spend the entirety of all of these shows for the next 6 weeks just talking about how incredible they are and going into minute detail, and there will be an element of that. But there's also this, you know, I don't see where any great sort of fall off comes unless there is some sort of injury crisis or something like that. For me, I just think they're so driven, and that does stem from him, but it also stems from the fact that he creates a culture of enjoying being driven. And that's what I think is brilliant, is everyone enjoys the work, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon.
No, and I think that's the key. And I remember at the start of the season, I think we were on the show, and you said, what do you think this season looks like in terms of a success? And I think I said something like winning the FA Cup and getting above 86 points. Because I just didn't envisage being able to do what we done last season again. To be honest, I just didn't think, I didn't think mentally that would be possible. Because getting 97 points and not winning the league after 29 years or whatever, you just look at it and thought, this is never going to happen in a million years. Do you know what I mean? We've had 97 points, we haven't won it. And you look at what they've done this season, it's incredible. It's genuinely incredible. Can they do that again next season? Well, yeah, they probably can. You look at Salah. Salah got interviewed after they won it, and he said, yeah, the only thing that can stop us this next season's our mentality. And we know that. And he's saying that already, and that, you know, it's just this, you know, Klopp has developed this place of continual progression. And as long as the players are there, you've got that attitude, then you don't see a huge drop off. I agree with you, Neil. The only thing that can cause us a big issue is if we have a mad load of bad luck and a mad load of injuries. But even then, when you'd say that at the start of this season, you lose Alisson and it's getting in goal, I was thinking, Jesus Christ, we're going to struggle. You know, and I remember being in Anfield, beating Norwich, thinking, that might be the league gone now. First game of the season, ridiculous, because you've got to go at such a point. You think Alisson's probably won us last season, 10 points, no problem. And Liverpool have got 99 points, and they missed Alisson for a quarter of the season, pretty much. And so, you know, when you look at that, you think, well, maybe if they had the hard lines, it doesn't really matter, they'll find a way. I tell you what, I'm looking forward to the Premier League years, because whenever it's on, I watch it, and then the last six weeks, the last quarter of an hour, the Premier League is turning off because Liverpool haven't won the league. But this one, yeah, I cannot wait. And it's like the next 10 years where it's the Premier League years, 1920, get in! And this is like a happy ending. Boom. I can't wait for it. And I think the other thing that's worth noting is after we beat Bournemouth, we could have not played another game and still won the league. And that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous, because that was before lockdown. We could have just gone, all of our lads could have got COVID and not played again all season, and we'd have still won the league.
There you are. I mean, you know, I'm glad they didn't.
I'm glad they didn't.
It's been
a bit of a damn
squib, the old trophy. It's been great. Adam, it's what we've waited for. It's what we've waited for so long to have it. You know, I think it has, personally, you know, even under these circumstances, even though they'll be still having, I don't think you and I have even seen each other properly yet, and that needs to get resolved pretty soon. But for me, all of it, it has been worth it. I'm overjoyed to be champions, to be quite honest with you. Like, I'm almost overcome with emotion now talking about it. We've waited so long, and it is as good as it was meant to be.
Yeah. The thing that Klopp's built is so good. The culture is so good, and I think Klopp talked about it a couple of seasons ago, of saying that that's what it's about. They're building something, and that titles will come. Because the thing that they've built is so good, the culture is so good, and I think everything that we've pretty much everything that we've talked about today touches on that. So we're talking about the young players. You know, you've talked about Neco Williams, him, and Minamino, actually, new players. It feels like a good atmosphere for them, for new players and young players to be brought into. And I don't think you could always say that. You know, we've had the Gerrard and Carragher for years. You know, that was the kind of the dressing room culture. And I feel like, you know, it wasn't a bad culture, but it was difficult, I think, for young players and new players at times to be brought in, to be brought up into that atmosphere. And you know, along with Milner, Henderson, Lallana, Van Dijk, Alisson, you know, the leaders of the team, along with obviously Klopp, you know, the thing that we've built here, I think, will be talked about in 100 years in terms of football club and just an organisation. It's the best culture of an organisation I've ever seen. And for that reason, I do think that as Ben was saying, you struggle really when you think about it to see how we don't compete next season and how it doesn't continue. You never know. You know, history makes a fool of everyone, doesn't it? But the thing that, and this is it, and I wasn't sure whether I'd be how I'd feel, you know, because it's been obvious, hasn't it, for a while that we were going to win the league. And we've had a long time to think and wonder how we'd feel. And I'm really excited. It's a strange one. I'm excited to be champions. It's happened, and I feel very excited about everything, about the whole project. Because it doesn't feel like an end. I feel like sometimes I'm a bit harsh and trying to put pressure on them to be continually achieving, but they do it themselves. They do it themselves. And you know, the things I said I want, you know, I'm still frustrated by us getting knocked out of Europe. I'm fuming that we're not in this little Champions League. You know, I wish we'd take the FA Cup a bit more seriously. There's still things there that and I'm sure the players feel the same. But it is magic. It's just, it is magic. And this is, you know, this is the thing that we talked about 10 years ago, Neil, of how we'd feel. You know, that thing about sitting up in a tree smiling at passers-by. The funny thing about that is that I think I meant smiling at them in a mean way. like you never thought we'd do it, and there we are. You know, to Liverpool fans. Because that was the culture at the time, you know. It was quite oppositional among the fan base, and that's all gone. And it's been a beautiful thing to see and to be a part of. And I'm glad I'm old. because I really appreciate it. It's like, you know, it's like when you get a band and they're a bit old, and I like them. They know what they're on about. They're not just kids mucking about. That's sort of how I feel. I'm really pleased that I'm excited for next season too. I saw Rob Gutman. I keep seeing him walking around the park, and we both agreed. And he was saying, "I'm just sick of it all now. Get it done with." Which I don't feel, you know, and I'm sure he doesn't really feel like that either. But he's like, we both agreed. We're so excited for next season. I'm glad that I'm excited. I don't know. I've used all the whole thesaurus words for happy there.
we won it whenever you think we won it. I think we won it at Leicester away. You might think before. You might think afterwards. We won it then. We won it when football stopped and you looked at the league table and went, "My God, that's in the bag." We won it when we absolutely destroyed Crystal Palace, and then we won it the night after when Manchester City dropped points against Chelsea. We win it when we get to 38 games. We've won it there against Newcastle. You get to see it. You get to look at the table. That's what it looks like when it's won. Going to get to win it again. We're going to get to win it again when we get back in grounds for the first time altogether. Get to win it again at the first away that we're able to go to, when we get to sing champions as they come onto the pitch. We get to win it again when we go to Goodison, and we get to win it again when we go to Old Trafford. Liverpool have won the league. League 2019-2020 Liverpool champions. If you don't subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, you'll be hearing this bit. Firstly, please do think about subscribing. It's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. It'd be brilliant if you could, and we could do all the fabulous work that we do and you can share in it with us. But we understand that not everyone does. And so there is a survey we'd like you to fill in. If you don't subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, it's theanfieldwrap.com/survey. Theanfieldwrap.com/survey to do that one. And that is, promise, the end of the show. Sports Social Podcast Network.